Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Friday, October 4th edition of Money Matters, the program all about money, earning it, spending it, saving it, and investing it. I'm Jeff Iceman, and today I'll be reading from a recent edition of Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine. And the first article is one that's kind of interesting and intriguing. Now that we've entered into the season of fall, the headline reads, "The Perks of Off-Season Travel." You can save money and avoid the crowds by visiting popular vacation spots at unpopular times. And it's an article by Miriam Cross of the Kiplinger staff. Traveling during the off-season is in. And no wonder. Off-season travelers are rewarded with shorter lines, lighter crowds, and lower prices, as well as activities that didn't exist several years ago. As crowds swell in major destinations during the high season, these places are getting creative, beefing up experiences and transportation options to attract visitors during the low season, says Gabe Sagley, senior editor at TravelZoo, a deal-finding website. Tour operators such as Globus and Insight Vacations offer programs dedicated to fall, winter, and spring travel. Travelers can typically save 20 to 40% compared with peak season itineraries to European and other hotspots. But no one wants to spend a vacation indoors, even if the price is right. Because not all off-season getaways are created equal, we found five ideas for summer, fall, and winter trips that deliver good values and great experiences, and often better weather than you might expect. So the first of these is to hit the slopes without the snow. Ski resorts are fast becoming hubs of year-round activity, especially for avid hikers and bikers. But the mountains can suit anyone seeking a tranquil vacation. You can find almost anything you want in a mountain town, says Evan Reese, CEO of Liftopia, an online seller of lift tickets. Activities can be as simple as riding the chairlift to the top of the mountain and then hiking around, or as varied as attending music festivals or zip lining. Nearby rivers and lakes beckon those who want to fish, boat, or swim, and night owls can join an astronomer for stargazing. You'll likely pay a fraction of the cost for accommodations compared with the peak season, even at upscale hotels. So the first of those types of places they cite in the article here is Vail, Colorado. In the summer, in Vail, you can slide down the tubing hill, zoom through the forest on a raised alpine coaster, soak up views from a gondola, or try your hand at whitewater rafting in the Eagle River. For something tamer, visit the weekly farmer's market and art show, stroll the highest botanical garden in the U.S., or catch a performance by the visiting New York Philharmonic. In summer, you can also take advantage of deep discounts at luxury accommodations. For example, rooms at the Sonnenalp Hotel start at about $350 per night for a weekend in mid-June, but they jump to $500 or more for a midweek stay in February when the snows have fallen. The second of the cities for this kind of a deal is Stowe, Vermont. The village of Stowe in the Green Mountains is a skiing hotspot on the East Coast, and crowd-weary travelers might also want to avoid the summer and leaf-peeping seasons. Those are even busier times to visit, says Scott McIntosh, director of sales marketing at Top Notch Resort in Stowe. But if you come after Columbus Day, the autumn crowds will have died down, and colors will still be present, if not as vibrant. Take in the scenery by hiking or mountain biking. When temperatures dip, you can hop around the area's craft breweries or sample flavors at the nearby Ben & Jerry's factory. Top Notch Resort offers discounts of up to 50% off rooms and deals on activities such as buy one spa treatment, get one free. And those happen between November and April. The last of these skiing places that seem to be affordable in off-season is St. Anton M. Arlberg, which is in Austria. This is one of Austria's most popular ski areas in the winter, but it is relatively quiet in the summer and fall, says Liftopia's Ries. You can traverse more than 180 miles of walking paths, passing a variety of alpine flowers that grow only at high altitudes, and stop for a snack at a mountainside hut with a stunning view. Grab a free St. Anton summer card on the first day of your vacation from your hotel or guesthouse owner, which rolls together one day of unlimited cable car rides, a two-hour e-bike rental, and a torchlight hike, and even more. The next of the areas that they suggest here are for off-season travel and bargains. Cruise when others refuse. The height of hurricane season in late summer and early fall coincides with some of the best cruise deals of the year. As families settle back into the school year and ships return from Europe, cruise lines lower prices and throw in perks to help fill those cabins. If you're flexible about which islands you visit, don't let the risk of storms deter you. Cruise lines monitor the weather and can easily circumvent oncoming storms. Keep in mind that you will probably get a credit or partial refund if your itinerary is drastically changed, but there is no guarantee. In extreme situations, such as returning to a different port city, you may be on the hook for flight changes and extra nights in a hotel. September is a good time to catch the tail end of Alaska's cruising season. Though the weather cools down, you'll go on the same excursions as high-season cruisers and see wildlife without crowds getting in the way. Head to the Mediterranean for an October cruise when the weather is still warm, but fewer tourists populate the port cities. The next area they talk about here is the Caribbean. The editors at cruisecritic.com found a seven-night Western Caribbean cruise from Miami and on the Norwegian Breakaway, which visits Honduras, Belize, and Mexico, for as little as $549 per person in mid-September through October. That price jumps to $849 in mid-July, as well as tacking on a $170 fee for taxes. Alaska, Cruise Critic also spotted a seven-night one-way cruise from Vancouver, Canada on Princess Cruises' Golden Princess in early October for as little as $579 per person. A similar itinerary in late July would have cost $879. And taxes and fees are an extra $210 per person. And finally, the Mediterranean. The MSC Divina offers a seven-night Western Mediterranean cruise out of Valencia, Spain, that makes stops in Marseille, Rome, Palermo, and other port cities, starting at just $538 per person in mid-October. You'll pay more than twice that to sail the same route in mid-July. And the next section that they offer up here is titled Extend Your Summer. In Southern Europe and the Middle East, balmy temperatures linger into the fall. It may not be warm enough to lie on the beach, but exploring villages and ancient sites is more bearable, especially when you're not jostling for space with fellow travelers in the heat. If you choose to take a tour, expect considerable discounts at that time. For example, Greece. Although the islands quiet down in the late fall and winter, there's plenty to do on mainland Greece all year round. Greece has been off the charts for us in the off-season, says Stephen Bourne, chief marketing officer of Globus, which runs low and shoulder season tours through its Escapes by Globus program. He calculates that travelers on Globus's fall tours to Greece can save about 45% compared with similar summer itineraries. Vacationers can climb the Acropolis, walk the ruins of Olympia, and learn the traditional Greek Sirtaki dance. Some tours also include a cruise around Mykonos, Santorini, and other islands dotting the Aegean Sea. Flying there in the fall is also considerably cheaper than in the summer. Round-trip airfares from the U.S. cost an average of $712 in November, compared with $1,160 in June, according to Kayak. They also recommend Egypt. Low season in Egypt varies depending on where you go, but hotels are still trying to entice tourists to return following the Arab Spring uprisings in 2011, so you'll get strong value for your dollar at any time of the year. The State Department rates the country a level 2, exercise increased caution, the same designation as a number of Western European countries, however, but for an extra layer of security, join a tour. We walked away from Egypt for 7 years. But in 2018, we felt like the destination was back, says Marty Seslow, Vice President of Marketing at Gate One Travel. Gate One Travel's 9-day Classic Egypt with a 3-day Nile cruise shuttles travelers to pyramids, temples, and tombs, and culminates in a 3-night cruise through the Nile Valley. Departures in October and November start at just $2,099 per person, including round-trip airfare from New York, and 2 domestic flights. Play around with departure dates to figure out the cheapest time to go, but you can expect pleasant daytime temperatures even in the depths of our winter. And lastly, they recommend Bermuda. Bermuda is cooler than you might expect in the winter, with temperatures only hitting the mid-60s during the day. It's beachy, not beach weather, says Sagley of Travelzoo. But, unlike in the Caribbean islands, a thousand miles south, you'll find the best deals on high-end resorts in Bermuda during the winter. For example, Travelzoo advertised nightly rates of just $173 to $185 for the luxurious Fairmont Southampton Resort last year for stays between December and March. Summertime sales at the same resort recently went for $209 to a whopping $349 per night. Activities such as golfing, sailing, sunset cruises, and scuba diving are available on the island year-round, while others, such as kite surfing or catching spiny lobsters for dinner with a licensed diver, are best done in the fall and winter. And the last section they give here is the hot deals in chilly places. Cool temperatures can be a small price to pay to visit over-touristed destinations during their winter lulls. Experiencing a church or museum without people waving selfie sticks makes a huge difference, says Sarah Schleister, senior editor of SmarterTravel.com. Plus, accommodations are easier to grab, and you'll dine along with locals rather than tourists. First of these places they recommend is the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon's jagged peaks and endless valleys are spectacular at any time of the year, but prices and visitors to the South Rim plunge during the winter. The North Rim starts shutting down on October 15th and doesn't fully reopen until May 15th, however. Although the weather can get bitterly cold, you also get plenty of sunny days with comfortable temperatures in the 50s and 60s, says Betsy O'Rourke, Chief Marketing Officer for Zantara Travel Collection, which manages concessions for several national parks. 3 of the 5 shuttle bus routes included in your park admission operate year-round, dropping riders off at various lookout points and trailheads. Or take a day trip aboard the Grand Canyon Railway, a historic railway with vintage cars and roaming musicians playing old Western tunes. The biggest perk related to visiting during the low season is being able to scoop up one of the limited hotel rooms within the park, with only a few weeks' notice, especially if you stay midweek. We sell out our summer inventory the day we open it for booking, 13 months in advance, says O'Rourke. Rates are typically 20 to 30% off summer highs, or up to 40% off if you book during one of Zantara's 2 annual sales, which happen in July and on Cyber Monday, which is December 2nd in 2019. The next of these quote-unquote chilly places that they recommend for off-season is Venice. Without hordes of cruise ship passengers and day trippers mobbing the narrow alleys, Venice can feel even more romantic in crisp weather. You see Venice in a different light after 5 p.m. when the overnight crowds are no longer there, says Bourne. Cozy up under blankets for a gondola ride through the misty canals, warm up with a mug of sumptuous Venetian hot chocolate, or shell out just $14 to glide around the ice rink at Campo San Polo, skate rentals included. Kayak reports the cheapest month to visit Venice, based on airfare and a two-night hotel stay, is January. In 2018, flights from the U.S. averaged just $620, and hotels averaged only $106 per night. The last of these quote-unquote chilly places to visit that they recommend is Japan. Cherry blossom season in late March and April is the most popular time of year to visit Japan. But competition for hotels and guides is fierce. Instead, you should plan your trip a month or two earlier for plum blossom season, says Lisa Clarkson, travel specialist at ATJ, an agency that focuses on Asian travel. You'll see explosions of fragrant pink flowers, but pay half the price for luxury accommodations. Plum blossoms typically appear from the beginning of January through March and can be found at parks, shrines, and temples across the country, she says. For example, the Yushima Tenmangu Shrine in Tokyo is one of the city's most famous viewing spots, and the Mito Plum Festival, with more than 100 plum tree varieties, is an easy day trip from Tokyo. Round-trip flights to Tokyo from the U.S. ran in the 800s on average in January, February, and March of 2018. Airfare sales to Japan are spotty, but we recently saw round-trip flights in just the 600s from Boston and in the 700s from Cleveland. The last section that they have of bargain travel here in the off-season is titled Defy the Rain. Think of the rainy season as green season, when downpours set the stage for verdant landscapes and lush vegetation. In some parts of the world, wet months may only amount to afternoon showers with otherwise sunny skies. In other places, you risk cold and damp weather at any time of the year, meaning low season is still a good time to visit. The first of these places that they recommend is Thailand. Rainy season starts in mid-May and lasts until mid-October in most of this country, but showers typically hit in the afternoon or evening and last for just an hour. That means you can still get in a full day of sightseeing and head into a restaurant or spa to escape the wettest parts of the day. Clarkson recommends visiting the north of Thailand in June or July, when summer rains have cleared away the smog from springtime crop burning, rice terraces are lush and green, and waterfalls are in full force. Flights to Bangkok averaged $964 round trip from the U.S. in July, according to Kayak, and four-star hotels averaged just $77 per night that same month. Domestic flights can be cheap. We recently saw flights from Bangkok to Chiang Mai in the north of Thailand for as little as $31 round trip this past July. Craving the beach, islands in the Gulf of Thailand, such as Koh Samui, stay relatively dry this time of year, albeit without the same low season discounts available elsewhere in the country. The next of the Defy the Rain countries that they suggest for travel is Scotland. Despite a reputation for inclement weather, Scotland's winters tend to stay above freezing. If you stick to the east coast, which sees less rain and snow than the west, you can visit the clifftop Dunatar Castle, the university town of St. Andrews, home to the world's oldest golf course, and the buzzing Christmas markets in Edinburgh. Or you can head up north to the Highlands region of Moray Speyside, famous for its malt whiskies and one of your best chances in the UK to see the Northern Lights. Kayak reports the cheapest months to visit Edinburgh, based on airfare and a two-night hotel stay, is February, when flights from the U.S. averaged just $617 and hotels cost an average of just $113 per night. And the last of these off-season spots to vacation is Aruba. The ABC islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao are far enough south in the Caribbean that they usually escape heavy storms during hurricane season. But lower demand in the region means you can find discounts of 30 to 50% at resorts from late August through October, says Leslie Clevenstein, director of marketing at CheapCaribbean.com. In peak winter season, four-night packages at the Renaissance Aruba Resort and Casino, which has a private island nearby with separate beaches for families and adults, starts only at $1,199 per person, including airfare from Fort Lauderdale. And this is found on CheapCaribbean.com. That cost drops to $749 per person for the same package in late September and early October. So there are travel bargains out there for you off-season intrepid discoverers. Okay, moving on. Our next article is one recommended to retirees, but a certain subset of retirees. It's written by Janet Bodnar of the Kiplinger staff. She's one of the editors at large. And she's of a certain age, and so her article is always one about living in retirement. And this one is entitled, Tips for Retirees Who Are Single. Of all the letters I have received as author of this column, and I am fortunate to get a ton of them, two of the most sobering came from a couple of readers who are single. Quote, publications and websites talk to their readers as if they are always married, end quote, writes Vic Linares. Never do articles address retirees who are single and how they cope. John Schultz also observes that you may be taking away a huge part of your social life when you retire. Keeping in touch with former workmates will endure for only one coffee off campus. Both Mr. Linares and Mr. Schultz, like Mr. Linares and Mr. Schultz, you may be solo, but you are not alone. In a study by AgeWave and Bank of America Merrill Lynch, pre-retirees said that what they expect to miss most when they leave work is reliable income. But what retirees actually miss most, after the fact, is their social connections. That's not surprising, says Ken Dykewald, CEO of AgeWave. You're at the peak of your career, answering phone calls and emails, going to meetings, he says, and then suddenly all that stimulation is gone. Without a spouse or other family members on the scene, it can be an even bigger shock. Being alone also raises financial and legal issues. With single folks, the most important thing is to have appropriate powers of attorney in case you become incapacitated, says Allie Hutchinson, Senior Vice President of Private Wealth Management at Brown Brothers Harriman. With no spouse or partner as backup, you're more likely to need long-term care from outside sources or to face estate planning issues, says Hutchinson. Retiring alone has its pros as well as its cons, however. You get to do what you want without having to negotiate with anyone, says Dykewald. There's an aloneness, but also a freedom with that, he cites. His brother, Alan, 72, who never married, gave up his job and moved to Florida to take care of their mother. Alan had played the drums as a teenager, and when their mother passed away, Ken gave him a gift of 10 lessons at a drum school. Now Alan is in one band and manages another, and I've never seen him happier, says Dykewald. Dykewald predicts that more singles will form families of friends in the future. In the AgeWave study, single retirees said the leisure experiences they value most are with friends. You're going to see women traveling together or men who play golf together, says Dykewald. There's no prescription for coping with being alone. For some people, the answer is to go back to work, or at least part-time. The number of older Americans in the workforce has been rising, and respondents in the AgeWave study said social connections are a key reason for working in their retirements, more important than earning money. For others, the answer is to try something completely different. I started taking classes in a new field purely for the pleasure of learning and ended up earning a master's degree in that field, writes reader Julia Brown. Another reader writes, I took up pickleball and immediately became addicted. It proved to be a lot of fun, expanded my social contacts, and was great cardio to boot. Rob Jennings created his own small network of retired guy friends. If I had to sum up all the advice from Kiplinger's readers, it would be to be proactive. What I realized is you have to make things happen, says Deb Russell. They will not come knocking on your door. Writes another reader, I think the best approach is to help others. Too much thinking about yourself is counterproductive. After retiring, Grayton Beavers traveled the world, but hope still springs eternal. I want to do a lot more with that elusive significant other whenever she appears, he says. If you're single, how have you coped with being alone in retirement? I'll be happy to share your experiences. Just let me know. So, for some of you out there who might be in that situation, a little bit of encouragement. Okay. I think if I can find something just short enough, we might have enough time for a little bit more. But it looks like all the articles I have will take us well past our time this week. Well, I'll just give you a little bit of this one. It has to do with investing. Here come the zero-fee ETFs, exchange-traded funds. The race to the bottom for fund fees has finally hit bottom. Two exchange-traded funds that launched at the beginning of April charge 0% in expense ratios, at least for the first 14 months. Another ETF awaiting Securities and Exchange Commission review will initially cost less than zero. The just-launched free ETFs come from online lender SoFi. The firm will waive each of the fund's 0.19% annual expense ratio until at least June of 2020. SoFi Select 500 focuses on growing large company U.S. stocks. SoFi Next 500 homes in on shares of mid-size and smaller U.S. firms. Meanwhile, relative newcomer Salt Financial is awaiting SEC approval of a low-volatility U.S. stock ETF that would essentially pay its shareholders to invest, at least for a while. Through April of 2020, the advisor says it will waive its 0.29% fee and contribute the annualized equivalent of 0.05% on assets up to $50,000 per year to the assets of the fund. That means that for every $10,000 invested in the fund, Salt would put in another $5 to boost the value of the fund's shares. Both Salt and SoFi have come late to the ETF party, so they are hungry for business as ETFs become more popular in investor portfolios. According to Charles Schwab, ETFs made up 33.5% of investors' portfolios in 2018, which was up from 20% in 2015. Firms are eager to participate in this growing market, and they're willing to waive fees to do so, says Rosenbluth. So if you're looking for a place to make some money, it seems that perhaps this is the time to get in on these zero-fee ETFs for at least a little bit of time. Well, that does bring us to the end of our time this week. As usual, you can reach us here at WRRS with any comments or questions you might have. Our number here is 513-487-4245. This has been Jeff Eisman for Money Matters. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a great weekend.